I'm Hody Johns. I'm joined by Michael Jimerson. Michael, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are y'all doing?
Oh, man. Crazy good. Better now that you're here. Life has been good to me, and I'm happy. And that's as much as we can ask. Now, you are an expert when it comes to free market environmentalism / green agorism. Let's break that down a little bit. We've talked about what agorism is on the show, and it's I believe it's just the Greek word for free market or open market, right?
Correct.
Right. So green, just meaning like anything, it ain't easy being green. Now, let's go ahead and dive right into the toughest part on this one. When people think of free markets, they tend to think about hating the environment and environmentalists getting in the way of the free markets. How do you see that kind of problem ironing itself out?
Well, I think that issue is directly related to the fact that those same people, when they hear the word, you know, let's say capitalism, they automatically think of what is actually government-controlled corporatism. And that is the same issue when it comes to environmental issues. It's common to see a private industry, you know, they throw away trash improperly, they pollute rivers or whatever, but it's the same issue. It's because they're government controlled, government protected, I mean, and it's a lot more difficult for them to be held accountable to their environmental damages than it would be for a company in a true free market.
Right. That is something that I've worked on both fronts on this show before. We've talked about how the government and the EPA actually does a great deal of damage to the environment, or at least allows it under the guise of not allowing it, and what free markets and what capitalism actually is, and people love to distort that to make it look like it's something else, or sometimes even get defensive when we attack what the government's doing with the markets, and then saying, "Well, you just must not like capitalism." It's like, no, I actually love capitalism. I hate them getting involved with it.
Well, once they're involved with it, it no longer is capitalism. It becomes corporatism or any other form of status-controlled economy. So, it for some reason they can't or won't understand the difference.
Yeah, capitalism, I think by definition, you actually, an economic and political system in which a country's trade and industry are controlled by private owners for profit rather than by the state. So as soon as the state, that's the definition of capitalism. As soon as the state has control, it's no longer capitalism. So too bad, you know. So if the state is doing something regulatory or interfering with it somehow, it's no longer capitalism. So yeah. So where did you get this passion, I guess, maybe for both, or did they occur at the same time, but both for free markets and for the environment?
Well, they didn't really start at the same time. One did lead directly into the other. I was raised, you know, like a lot of us, wasn't raised an anarchist or libertarian, but I was raised on the right. My dad was big into business and all that, and that part came naturally to me. And just over the years, I just became more and more of a libertarian than an anarchist. But as for the environment, I always grew up admiring and being in the outdoors as much as possible. And along with my journey in becoming an anarchist, I did a lot of reading and research. And that's what I did for eventually becoming an environmentalist too. They started off on two different branches, but they eventually became one and the same for me.
Awesome, man. So you started off kind of on the writer side of things. What are some things about the environment that you see free markets? How do you see free markets? I guess it has to be hypothetical because the government controls everything. But what do you see the free market solution as being to a lot of the environmental challenges we have these days?
Well, not so much environmental challenges as much as like resource control. Like with the industry I'm in, I do civil engineering testings and inspections of construction sites. We work alongside the contractor when it comes to developing, whether it's a neighborhood or a commercial building, whatever. One of the biggest things as part of our contracts, as you know, like with businesses, you have to save as much money as possible. One of the things that I see very commonly of, and part of my position is to be somewhat involved in, is utilizing as many of the on-site resources as possible to minimize overhead, and then only then bring in outside resources if absolutely necessary, whether it's, you know, most, well, at least in my case, it's all on-site soil or dirt being used for the construction. The one thing they try to emphasize as much as possible is if it's suitable, use as much as you can that we already have available to us before bringing an extra.
Right. Yeah, I love that angle because this is one of those things that I talk about. The market, if it were free, would try to use as minimal energy as possible to produce a maximum output possible. So it's funny when you always see these hypothetical views of capitalism where they've managed to bulldoze all the trees over and smokestacks, you know, have replaced every tree and everything. It's like, well, what are they doing that requires that much energy? Because energy is a precious resource, and you would think if it's a market system, you would want to use as little of that as possible at the cheapest cost possible, fewest resources, so that you either pass that profit on to your guests, or heck, even if you're greedy, you put it in your own pocket, what you save on energy, right? So there's really no incentive to be wasteful with the resources of the environment. It's also, I mean, when we talk about scarcity, you know you're creating your own scarcity if you cut and burn too much land, you know. So I mean, I guess that's more about property than it is about energy, but they're kind of tied together. If you say, well, I've harvested all of this resources, or I've used all of this energy, I'm gonna have to find a new source. Well, you just put yourself out of business, right?
Or at the very least, increase your overhead, which in itself is an issue also. So
right. Got to compete, right? Competitive markets. That's part of capitalism, right? That's the, I think the sixth pillar of capitalism is that you got to compete with everybody else. So the, cool, man. Cool. So what are some, you run really great. I don't follow too much on Facebook because I don't have a lot of time, but I really love your page. It is just called, and now it's a closed group for all you people who want in, but it's called Free Market Environmentalism / Green Agorism. And it is a, it's you really are good at keeping in touch with it and providing really relevant content. And it's surprising to me how many people are interested in this aspect, both loving the free market and loving the environment. Do you find that there's like a really good community?
It's better than I expected, honestly. I've been doing this group on and off for a couple of years now, and I've only within the last few months I've seen an increase of interest that you've seen, and I'm hoping it keeps going that way, and I'm going to keep continuing with the research and the uploading and the keeping in touch with it just to make sure everything is as updated, relevant as possible.
Gotcha. See, I might be one of those people that joined in on the rush, and I don't know what it was. I guess that, like, for me in the last few little bit, there's just been more curiosity as far as this goes. There's been people that want to learn how to harvest their own resources. I've seen a lot of, I know with gardening, a lot of the self-sustaining thing, I know it's really popular among the anarchist community, especially because, I mean, government's got its tendrils and everything. So if you're going to really embrace that agorism and try to have minimal, you know, try to participate with as little government interference as possible, growing food is a lot of how you do that. And so that's more on like the gardening side of things. That's kind of the direction I took it with Erica. You've kind of got the environment side of things, which is where I wanted to look at it with you. I guess let's open the box here. What do you think of global warming, and what's the best way to combat that if you believe in it at all, or climate change, or however you want to say it?
Well, that's actually, you know, as we all know, a very difficult subject, and one that I tend to somewhat avoid just because of the sheer enormity and how divisive it is. One thing I will say, though, is, you know, we can't deny the Anthropocene impact that we've had on this planet. However, I'm of the personal opinion that of what we know, he says, what we know of climate change and global warming, all that, we don't have the technological ability to do as much damage as we hear that we do, as, you know, all the alarmists and all that. Granted, there are certain things that can be done better, or more efficiently, or more, you know, friendly on the earth and all that. But I guess basically what I'm saying is I personally don't believe it is to the extent we are led to believe, but there are things we can do that are better, or they can be better to prevent that from actually happening.
Sure. I think the truth is kind of somewhere in between the two. We have the one side saying it doesn't exist at all. It's nothing happening. You're making up stuff. And then we have the other side saying, well, it's going to end in, you know, the world's going to end in 10 years, which they've been saying for the last 70 years. And so we're like, okay, well, you're full of crap. You know what I mean? Like both sides are exaggerating their side, you know, and I got into it. You know, I there's a lot of hoaxes to look into, a lot of people being fake about it, a lot of I think you'll see the email correspondence with them trying to exaggerate the numbers. I remember the email exchange between the NOAA scientists, which were like, oh man, we didn't find any warming happening in this area. Well, we're going to lose our funding if we don't, so let's figure out a way to make it look like there is with the data that we have. And it was just kind of, I mean, in the NOAA, we get three sources that measure global temperatures, and that's one of the sources that we use. So it's, you know, they don't contribute just a little bit. But on the other hand, most scientists that look into it, even if they're not government scientists, will say that there's problems, right, that are related to it. I know here in Utah, I actually had a friend who's a professor at Weber State, and this is when I first started believing global warming at all, or at least climate change. But she's an entomologist, right? Studies bugs, insects, kind of like microbiology, as well as, you know, small forms of macrobiology, but really likes the bugs. And one of the things that she looked at here in Utah was we had these beetles that had this cycle. It would go warm to cold, warm to cold, that would only come out at a certain temperature. Now, we as humans, we can exist in a lot of different temperatures because our bodies are so adapted. And so we can, you know, but these little bugs, these small little organisms, really, there's a very sweet spot for this temperature. So what happened is Utah got so warm that the temperature that they were awake was longer than what they were for asleep. And it kind of showed how it messed with the environment a little bit because it messed with all of nature's feeding cycles around here. There was just a lot of dominoes that fell when looking at it. And so for me, I was like, oh, okay, I can actually see, I can actually observe the change along with her, where she's like, here's what I've noticed and here's the problems that are coming out about that. Now, who's to say that there aren't going to be positive things that come from the Beatles having to be awake longer? Who knows? You know, there's, you know, that was just one example she gave, but I'm sure if you multiply that happening around the world, there's just a lot that we're going to have to adapt to if we continue to let it get warm. I guess for me, what I like about free markets is kind of the individual property aspect. When you say you don't have the right to poison my air, if you're gonna, you know, in a free market system, the government just gives you a license to poison the air. They don't stop you from doing it. Whereas if you poison the air, you know, in a free market system, you're going to have to pay reparations or answer to literally everybody else on the planet.
Exactly. So,
yeah, I know it's kind of tangential. And like you said, this isn't necessarily an area you want to go digging around in. So we can move off of that one. Where do you see is kind of the future in free market environmentalism? Where would you like to see the movement go? I guess, where would you like to see it go, and where do you think it's heading?
Well, I think it's heading, I think it's more like on the food side, like you had mentioned, with the permaculture episode you had previously done. More and more people are becoming more involved with more sustainable and more autonomous farming and agricultural practices, and as part of more increased food security against the control of the state. As for what I personally like to see it go, and it's partly like the subject of my book, is those sustainable and green and free market practices for not just the homesteading aspect, but for the civil infrastructure aspect, which is good, you know, like I said, goes back to what I do. Like I said, I'm in that industry. I didn't mention that I do see a lot of, you know, we have to use as much on-site stuff as possible, but I still do see a lot of waste, especially since a lot of what we do is per a government, whether it's a county, state, or federal requirement, there's a lot of waste involved with that too. So one thing I would like to personally see is more, or a lot less waste, and a lot more sustainable practices in regards to civil infrastructure construction, whether it's on the personal level or a group of people voluntarily gathering together to build something at that level.
Yeah, there's too much waste, and we're getting better in that, but it is very much I think we've kind of hit a critical mass as far as the planet goes on waste. We're very much you know, you see the pictures, and granted, this is not America. This is a lot of third world countries without, you know, these systems to help take care of it. But I think we have to understand that even though, well, there's articles that show America actually ships a lot of their garbage out to some of these places, but also we just really compact it here, and we have systems that compact it, but we're not really cutting down on it. And waste like that, it has to go someplace. It goes to a property. Now, and this is another example that I brought up when we talk about free markets. You want to talk about the value of property in a free market versus the value of property in a public market. Well, in a public market, it's driven up because the government creates a false scarcity with the land, because you can't just build anywhere you want to. You can't just live anywhere you want to. And, but at the same time, they, because they own all the land, can just be like, eh, this area is a junkyard now. This area is a dump. You know, we're just going to get rid of it. In the free market, you really have to answer to the location of a junkyard, you know, and the size and scope of a junkyard, to just be like, yeah, we're putting all of our garbage here. This is junkyard island. There's going to be people that are like, well, I actually see some value for that island. It's tropical. You know, there's people that want to live there. You can't just throw all your trash there. You know, in the current system, we say, well, we own it, so we're gonna, versus in a free market where they say, well, you can't do that. You know, I think this is another one of those areas when you talk about waste that the government contributes to more than it helps.
Well, a lot of that's simply the difference between incentive and not caring about incentive.
What's the, man, great point. Do you see any way, getting out of the, now I am like you, I am also an agorist, where I just, as opposed to necessarily fighting the government, I ignore the government and I go about living my life as best as I can. Do you think there's any way to, what's the word that I'm trying to, that I would say, how do you see is getting into the system that we want from either the free market or the environmental perspective? What's the best way to get there from the current system? Do you see any changes that we could make that would legally aid our way there? Or do we just kind of agorist our way there and pretend government doesn't exist until they can't control us anymore?
Well, to be honest, if you follow the legal path, how far are you going to get in the right direction? I'm of the personal opinion that when it comes to, you know, like exactly your question, you know, learn as much as you possibly can about everything, but especially in this regard, especially the environment and your impact on it, other people's impact on it, what you can do to protect you and your own, and to contribute to the less waste and more sustainable practices on, or at least in regards to your specific plot of land, so to speak. But while at the same time trying to protect against those who will try to prevent you or control you by most usually violent means, and that's, like you said, ignoring the government, is in some cases easier, in some cases far more difficult, definitely more safe depending on the situation. And while I had mentioned in my previous podcast, I'm not opposed to violence, it is a last resort option. It's just, in the meantime, educate and do what you can to protect against the environmental issues and governmental issues, so to speak.
Right. And they really are tied together. You know, I know Paul and I did an episode called, it was one of my first dailies, and I still use it all the time, called Who Will Speak for the Trees. I believe it's Wall Daily number 5. It was one of the first ones I was on. But man, it was such a, it was a powerful look into how the government doesn't actually fix the problem. Because like you mentioned incentive, and that's the perfect word. They don't have an incentive to keep it clean. They have an incentive to make money, to gain control, to gain power. We were looking at kind of the history of the EPA and the establishment of some of these laws, and They passed this one, and they were like, you know, it's, you know, of course they always title it like cleaning up all our rivers for the sake of our children, and if you don't, you hate Nazis act, or you love Nazis act, you know, and so they passed some law like that. And the example was, of course, the Ohio River catching on fire because the U.S. Steel Corporation was polluting it. And so they were like, oh, well, we need, obviously, the government to do this because look at what they're doing without us. So we passed this law. And what happens, I think, literally in the month of it passing, the U.S. Steel Corporation kept polluting at the same level they were before. They just had to pay a license fee to the EPA in order to pollute. You know, it's like, well, did you pay your fine? Yeah, I did. Okay, well, then continue. You know, and this was affecting tons of people. This is affecting everybody who had a business along the Ohio River. If you owned property along the Ohio River, if you were, you know, if you fished along it, if you did boat tours along it, you know, this affected you. And all that mattered after that point, there was no recourse for these people. Where they it's funny because they turned to the judicial system that said, "Hey, we need justice." You know, they've affected thousands of people, you know, and the government looks at it and they're like, you do need justice. These people should have to pay us a few thousand dollars every month. And it's like, well, that wasn't the, and now the steel prices are more expensive because they have to pay that licensure fee. It's like, no, we wanted you to stop the pollution, you know, but you just let them do it, you know, with the Energy Star scandal where I believe the Energy Star products are no better than any other product, you know, you pay a fee, you slap the Energy Star logo on there, and they're, you know, and it's funny because they ran these tests and they found that half of the things that don't have any Energy Star, you know, logo at all are actually more efficient than those with the Energy Star. They just didn't pay their fee to the government for it to say Energy Star, and they're not allowed to say it's energy efficient because they didn't pay that fee. Just ridiculousness, right? And
it's, speaking of that, that's actually kind of something similar I read to you, I want to say like a month or a month and a half ago now, where supposedly the USDA now is authorizing Monsanto or related influence on officially stamped organic products. Oh. So it kind of defeats the purpose of the labeling. So.
Right. Yeah. So if you're there and yeah, I think you just notice it every time that the people that are actually growing organic products then are now going to be, you know, it's just going to get more expensive, you know, slash you have to pay your fee. And it's going to be done in the name of regulatory behavior, you know, to say, well, you know, all these people that aren't actually organic might slide in there. It's like, but really, don't you think the market's going to take care of that? I mean, we're not going to let that fly. You know, it's not like an epidemic right now. And you might find one instance where we will correct it when it does happen. But when you have the government step in, they don't allow that natural flow to occur, I guess, of being like, they messed up. Okay, let's take care of it. They said, well, somebody messed up. Well, who knows when the next person's going to mess up? So we're just not going to let it happen anymore.
Basically, all they do is put a shackle on the invisible hand of the market.
Boom. Yeah. Yeah. And if you think about it, I mean, how would this be any different than the, you know, what they did with the energy product scandal, Energy Star scandal? You just say, well, if only half of the products are actually more energy efficient, then see them looking into the organic industry. And if they're just going to take money in exchange for it, then you're probably looking at half of them not being organic anymore either. Like, I hate to say it, but, you know, just getting more and more tolerant, because then at that point, like you said, incentive, there's the shackle. They are shackled to their big business buddies. And so they are going to say, you know, instead of a free market, they're just going to shackle that hand and say, well, but you're also tied to your corporate allies.
Now this company, who not all they have to do is just pay a fee, but if they continue their practices, they have no incentive to maintain the original product with the original intent. They can just push out whatever or provide whatever and just pay this fee and get away with it and continue to get away with it.
Yep. Yeah. That's it in a nutshell, man. So what are some goals that you have for, I guess, this audience? What would you like them to know or understand? What would be your message that you'd want to make sure that you got out when you've got a new audience like this?
Educate yourselves. again, you know, learning what you personally can do, what you can do with your family or friends, what you can do to protect yourself while living how you want, and basically boils down to education. And I simply put, I guess.
Where's a good place to turn for education?
Well, one website I use, it's not specifically for education, but it has a great many of resources, even non-environmental, is Mises.org.
Okay, cool. Yeah, the Mises Institute there. We have Trish Stewart with the Weird Libertarians program, and she's a member, and we have some stuff up there. So awesome, man. Well, Mises.org for those of you who want to educate yourselves. We want to do some final thoughts here. Man, as far as final thoughts for me goes, I will start and we'll end with you. I just really, first of all, thank you for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. I really love talking about these types of issues because I think I went from a place in being libertarian where I thought it was too bad that we couldn't be pro-environment, because I was like, oh man, I guess part of the thing is you got to let them do whatever you want, to really understanding and really changing that if you are that if you do love the environment, that, man, liberty is the only solution to this. You know, we've tried the big government solution, we've tried the small government solution, and really kind of the no government solution is the only way that's going to work on this one. And or at least, even if you're not a full-on anarchist, at least just no government in this particular area is the solution as far as environmental concerns go. And I just, I think it's one of those that I think too many liberty lovers dance around. Man, do not dance around this issue, because this is something that you can absolutely win as a liberty-minded person. This is a subject that you can win on with your friends, where you say, hey man, I love the environment too, and I'm willing to bet that I love it even more than you love it. You know, that's how I approach that my leftist friends when they talk about it. And I'm just like, hey man, time out. You think what you're doing is helping the environment, but it's not. Let me give you some solutions that I think will help. And these solutions, man, they are proven to work better and they sound better. And it's just one of those that you say, yeah, like, I mean, what's your solution? Just pay a heftier fee, you know, ban cows from farting. I mean, like, come on, get real right now, you know, like ban air travel. Like, come on, we can be better stewards to the environment without Big Brother watching over us. So those are my final thoughts. Michael, let's have your final thoughts.
All I guess I could really say is I pretty much second everything you said. On my end, I'm going to keep continuing with the reading and the research. And I do have my own personal plans on putting a lot of this to practical use. Just at the moment, they are only plans. But on top of that, all I can say is you can love the environment and love liberty and practice both.
Awesome, man. Well, thank you. Tell you what, I don't want to end without people knowing. You said you're working on a book. Is that right?
I don't know. There's a couple different things that I was working on thought-wise that I had posted in my group and that I did mention to a few people that eventually that's probably my plan. But right now I'm just in a phase where everything's coalescing together. If it turns into a book, that's fantastic. If not, it'll turn into something eventually.
Okay, cool. Well, keep us updated on that, man, because I would definitely be interested in that. Anytime somebody I actually know personally writes something, I'm like, oh man, I gotta read that, you know, like that's cool. Well, Michael, thanks again for coming on the show, man. I hope you had a good time. And audience, patreons.com/weirdlibertarians, we really appreciate your support. If there's any feedback, this whole morning we were actually just looking at feedback from our audience. So if there is something that you feel direction that you want to see in the show, if you want to see more of this, man, give us some support, give us some love, and then give us some advice. We're always open to it. But Michael, thank you so much, and we look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you.